Welcome to the Best People We Know radio show. This is where you'll meet experts and celebrities who share their success secrets with you to help you be your most successful best too. Your host, Deb Scott, is a certified professional coach at Discover the Amazing You Coaching and author of the award-winning motivational book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up. The Best People We Know radio show brings you powerful resources, effective ideas, and transformational tools you can use to educate, inspire, and motivate you to be your most purposeful, peaceful, happy best. So get ready to experience mind vitamins to feed your whole soul. Good change is about to happen. The Best People We Know radio show. Here's your host, Deb Scott.
Good morning, best people I know. Good morning, good afternoon. I suppose it could be good evening as well, depending upon where you're listening across the globe, or if you've downloaded the show on iTunes to your mobile device. You could be in the gym right now, exercising and getting your mind vitamins in your mind and in your soul and in your body too. So that would be awesome if you share this show with a friend and give us a rating. We're really appreciative of having you here, whether you're a regular listener or a new listener. We know that you'll enjoy being part of the Best People We Know family because we are dedicated to inspiring you with tips and tools that you can trust and dealing with issues that are relevant with experts who care and can help us make a difference. So at the end of this show, our goal is always that you walk away saying, oh, I learned something new, and I'm better for having listened to the show and met that guest expert. And today, it's all about social media, parents, teens, things that really matter to those of us who care about our youth and what they have to deal with now in social media. And this is the third part in a four-part series with Tia Starr of the Tia Starr Network, who really understands and works with teens. She's won presidential awards for her work. She's absolutely brilliant, and it's my pleasure to be able to call her a friend. She is unbelievable, the integrity queen. And today we're going to talk about IAD, which is Internet Addiction Disorder. Yeah, you can look it up. You can Google it. Go on Wikipedia. It's actually a new term, and we're going to talk about this. And people that care, if you have a question, 347-637-1318, 347-637-1318, whether you're a parent or a teen, we want to hear from you. Call in. We're here to help each other in a non-judgmental way. And you can also type things in the chat room. So Marcus is a favorite. Follow us. Get the worry-free updates. And just a little note, there is a Motivation Marathon, motivationmarathon.com, coming up. And if you go to motivationmarathon.com, there's some great speakers. It just happened to be, shameless plug, I happen to be one of them. So definitely check that out. If you sign up, you get a free gift, and it's going to be an amazing, amazing event. And we all need motivation to keep our spirits going and growing. So I hope you'll join us for that. So let me tell you about Tia Starr of the nationally recognized Tia Starr Network. And she really is no stranger to success. At 12, she was writing poetry and gaining national recognition for The Day I Died, which was written in honor of her late grandfather. She was spinning records, performing as a hip-hop artist, and writing her own songs by the age of 13. And she actually became an entrepreneur at the age of 14. Today, she has titles such as an award-winning entrepreneur, a talk show host, a songwriter, a musician, a DJ, a hip-hop artist, a lyricist. She's a promoter, a poet, a writer, a sound and visual engineer, an editor, a producer, a director, a filmmaker, a graphic artist, an animator, a webmaster. She's a programmer and designer, and she is founder of two nonprofit organizations and CEO of the Tia Starr Media Network, which is international. Her volunteer work has received awards by people such as the prior President George W. Bush, and of course, in her area of Cleveland, the mayor of Cleveland, Jane Campbell, had recognized her for amazing volunteer work in her home area. And it is my privilege and pleasure to introduce my friend, Tia Starr. Hi, Tia. How are you?
Hey, Deb. How's it going? glad to be here with you this morning, and I know you're on a whirlwind marathon of many things. So,
yeah, we just lots going on, but you know, it's really exciting. I mean, you got to squeeze the juice out of life, and I always feel better when I'm doing and contributing and doing stuff like that. But I am really, this is a third part. I mean, and our show has ranked, you know, I think it was number 3 in the family category last show. I mean, it really been getting a lot of interest. We've had calls, you know, international calls, people calling in, and I'm really humbled and excited about what we're doing. But I want to let you take it away today about the IAD, and you have some people that are joining us today, and I just want to make sure that, you know, I'm going to leave it to you because you'll do better with this than me.
No, you know me. I'm going to be humble about that, and by the way, it's an honor to be your friend. So I just want to say that, and you know, and with a lot of love behind that. So I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that to you. But today,
we have a couple of people. They're both on air, by the way. I just want you to know that both of those people that you've invited are both on air. So Mike and Nancy should be on air. Okay, so go ahead.
Alrighty. Today I wanted to talk about Internet Addiction Disorder, which is IAD, which is really actually a true medical term. And I've got Mike Surgeon, who is an awesome up-and-coming artist. I mean, if you think my credits are great, you just don't even want to go into with this guy is phenomenal. Community activist, leader, I mean, this poet, writer, just phenomenal young man for the community and what he's doing in the community now with helping our teams. And Dr. Nancy, who I believe is on air now. Dr. Nancy?
I am on air. Can you hear me?
And I know you got to go. So what I really want to do right off the bat, Mike, can you introduce yourself to the world?
Hello, world. My name is Mike Surgeon, and I'm humbled and blessed to be here with everybody this morning. Thanks to Tia for inviting me here, and Deb, although we're meeting over the phone, I look forward to meeting you in person, but it's great to be on your show.
My pleasure.
Awesome. And Dr. Nancy, I know you have a tight schedule this morning, so I would love for you to take the lead on what we talk about is Internet Addiction Disorder and your take on it as a clinician. And what you know of the disorder and how we can do, what we're looking at as far as solutions that we can provide the team.
Tia, thank you so much, and Deb, for inviting me again to be a part of this really very important topic, because there's a biology to Internet addiction. It's not just a bad habit. You know, there are a lot of things that become bad habits because we do them all the time. They become habitual, and then they're hard to break. That is one factor with Internet addiction, but there's another whole factor that is the biology of the addiction itself. And whether you're addicted to the Internet or to cigarettes or to, television or to gambling or to anything else, there's an actual reaction in the brain. And let's take something simple. Let's take donuts. Okay, let's say every time you walk past the donut store, you have to go in and you have to get a donut. And you think, well, I'll just walk another way. I'll just take another path and I'll change that habit. But what happens is that the brain actually, after a couple of exposures to something, so let's say it's the Internet, let's say it's teens and the Internet, after a couple of exposures to something really pleasurable, the brain develops what are called, the pleasure centers of the brain start to respond to it, so that there's a connection between the desired object and the pleasure center in the brain, and it becomes fixed. Now, if you talk to a smoker or if you talk to anyone that's ever quit anything, they'll say, I still want it every day. I still think about it every day. I don't do it. I've broken the habit. But the desire has never left me. Okay? That is because once you, it's almost like crack cocaine. Don't get started. All right? Because once you start, those pleasure centers in the brain say, oh, I want more of that. I want that every day at the same time, and I want the same thing. And so if coming home after school and visiting certain aggressive websites or, you know, getting on your internet and doing your social networking is a part of your day, It's not only a habit, it's also something that your brain will crave if you don't do it.
Wow, that's horrifying.
Well, it is. It's scary because you really have to think about, and you know, people, there are soft addictions. Like people say, oh, I'm addicted to this, I'm addicted to Grey's Anatomy. I have to, that's my fix every week. I have to have my Grey's Anatomy fix or whatever your favorite show is. And so it can be harmless as long as you know, yeah, I'm addicted to Grey's Anatomy, but you know what? If I have something better to do, I'm not going to give in to that. I'll tape it. I'll watch it later. So you have to kind of monitor even a soft addiction to a website, to, texting is totally out of control. Kids get hundreds of texts a day. And it's become something that's not just, you know, it's not just a part of their day. It becomes an addiction. It becomes just a part of how they live.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
you know, I want to address that because I think on, was it two shows ago, you brought up the fact that when you're looking at teens that are still in development, there are certain aspects in their brain or the synapses that aren't quite there yet. So when they have any type of negative media or any type of addictive behavior, it's programmed and wired in permanently.
It's programmed and wired in such a way that it's probably, unless you have a really bad experience with something that totally shifts your way of connecting to it. You know, let's say something horrible happens. Let's say you're using a certain website and someone comes on and cyberbullies you on this website. Ooh,
right.
You're not going to want to go there again. So it can change, you know, through an aversive experience, but that's not how we want to change it. You know, that's
right.
Not how we want it to happen. And kids, if they can understand this whole concept, and, you know, when drugs were the big issue, we taught kids how to avoid drugs and what to do if you feel addicted, all right? So now it's time to educate not only parents but kids to say, hey, you can get in such a habit of doing this that it's really hard for you not to do it. And if your parents say, hey, put it away, put whatever it is, your iPad or whatever you're doing away during dinner, you can get in a bad mood. Because the pleasure centers in the brain are saying, I want that, I want that. And you can get, you know, anytime you don't have the thing you're addicted to, what happens? You get in a bad mood, you get testy, you get anxious. So parents should watch out for symptoms like that. If they say, hey, we're going to be driving to grandma's house, it's a 4-hour drive, it's going to be family time, no technology, which is a really good thing to do. If your child gets anxious, if they get moody, if they get fidgety, they're experiencing withdrawal symptoms.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's powerful. I wanted to add something about what effect does social, how can I put this? Some of our kids, obviously, when they're drawn into that world of just the cyber world, they don't have the social interactions to interface with to give it the balance. So we talk about the addictive behavior disorder. Some of the solutions that we're looking at for the kids, we want to create solutions where they're actually getting a balance back. But what do you suggest for parents to become involved to get that balance back as well? Because we have a lot of parents who are just as addicted as the kids.
Well, I think parents can comprehend the whole comparison with workaholism. Because we have, you know, in many families we have a workaholic parent. And parents understand what that is, to be addicted to something, to be addicted to work. So I'll use that as an example. The parents are addicted to social media just like the kids, and they may be able to sort of think, this is kind of like my work addiction. I can't sit through dinner without taking a call from the office. You know, it's the same, oh, my God, I have a text. I want to look at my text, and I can't because my mom said I can't do it during dinner. The idea is to say, okay, the balance is such that I'm going to turn it off after a certain hour, and I'm not going back. You know, set yourself a boundary. And, for example, you know, as a recovering workaholic, I now say, okay, after a certain hour, you know, Deb, Tia, you may not hear back from me. if you send me an email, because I've figured out, you know, what I have to do to keep that balance. And I have to have hours where I'm on and hours where I'm off. And those have to be really sacred, because those other times are my time to spend with people and to do good work with people and to meditate and to know that I'm not going to be a whole person on that internet unless I am balanced in other ways. You really have to set boundaries with yourself, and you really have to know when to turn it off. And you have to, every person has to figure out what those boundaries are for them, because it's a little bit different for everybody.
Awesome. And when we talk about internet addiction, I'm going to go back to something I found on Wikipedia that are some of the addictions.
Great.
Compulsive gambling, pornographic addiction, procrastination, self-addiction, the workaholic addiction, which you're talking about, texting addiction, even going into the cyberbullying part of it where you're in that space, and there's the whole social aspect of it, which I think we brought up on the first show about you got there, you got on it, what did you get out of it, and then you have a lot of kids now who are just going through the whole bullying aspect of it. Just recently we saw the young ladies who were basically given a slap on the wrist, although they were directly affected in the death of a young lady through bullying and cyberbullying.
Yes, yes, exactly.
You know? And so some of the things that I realized in that, when we talk about our teens in particular, because we put them in such a space without any adult supervision, is that they don't really understand the adult consequences of what they're going to do.
They don't understand the adult.
Yeah.
Okay, so how the adult fits is sort of part of the problem?
Well, not the adult, the consequences. Like,
oh, the consequences. Okay,
right.
I wasn't hearing you. The consequences of their behavior. Well, here's the sort of the cause, the source. Because of the high exposure in the media to aggressive actions, kids have become desensitized to aggression, and they've become desensitized not only to the behavior itself, but to the effect of the behavior. Kids who particularly watch aggressive programs and use aggressive, sort of violent video games have an extremely reduced level of empathy for victims. What I'm saying is they don't get it. They don't even understand the effect of what they're doing to another person. And, you know, when there was a time when slapstick comedy was funny, you know, hurting somebody else was funny, but everybody got that it was a joke. Now it's a much more integrated kind of aggression in television, and sometimes the really aggressive guy is the good guy. So you associate those aggressive take charge behaviors as good things. You know, it goes back to the role models. So there are a lot of factors in what reduce the perpetrator's empathy for the victim. So they don't even get it. They don't even understand the social consequences of their behavior.
Wow.
Yeah. So education, parent, and I think, you know, we're down to having to educate kids. And you mentioned pornography addiction. Boy, that occurs very, very quickly. I've had older teens and adults come to me to try to break pornography addiction, and, oh, my God, that is a real tough one. That
well, I
is
think
a real tough one.
Yeah, because it's imagery plus the interaction. And
yeah,
I know that. You know, so the synopsis has definitely left a path.
I've had brilliant men and women, intelligent, educated people, say, "I can't stop doing this. I can't break myself from it." So yeah, you have the additional element there that's self-reinforcing. But as we did with the drugs, you know, when we recognized that America's teens had a drug problem, it's time for education. It's really time to get in there and say, okay, this is what this is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. Remember that commercial from the 60s and the 70s?
Yes.
Okay, this is your brain. This is your brain on technology.
Ah, that's a campaign.
And to do a real educational program for kids that says, hey, you know, it's not fun to be the victim, and this is what happens. This is what happens when you use certain websites. This is what happens when you use certain video games. And I think a lot of the video games in particular come with ratings, you know, PG and such, you know, so that the parents kind of know what's safe and what's not. It's just like the television programs. They show you, you know, how much violence and how much sexual content there is and how much bad language and so on. So ratings, you know, really, really lobbying for ratings on everything. Websites, you know, I think we need to get some. We have no rules. We have no laws for the Internet. Anybody can put anything out there that they want. It needs to be, there needs to be some guidelines about, hey, this website has sexually explicit content. Do not allow anyone under the age of 18 to go here. We need to get a little more restriction, a little more control, and a lot more education, because restriction and control come very, very slowly and only through crisis, only through, you know, something really bad has to happen for somebody to step in and say, hey, maybe we need to put ratings on websites.
Well,
so right now we're looking at education, you know, training kids. This is the Internet. This is what it does. This is what it's good for. This is what it's fantastic for. And this is what it's not so good for. And this is how you can keep from becoming addicted. And the parents are the ones that are going to have to step in and say, this is when you can and can't use your technology. That really puts a good control within the child. Okay, the child starts to integrate, this is when I can get online, this is when I can't. And they really get used to that, and they really get that sense of balance. It becomes very integrated that there's a time for it and there's a time to not do it. And the other thing that's going to create a big difference in terms of the biology for kids is for parents to draw a line on what you can do and what you can't do.
Well, that's taking responsibility back.
Yeah, so in other words, these are the okay things to do, these are the not okay things to do. It's like somebody's on who's on a diet. Eat this, don't eat that. Okay, it's real simple, and I use food because it's so addictive. But that is another thing that helps people break food addiction. You can eat this, but you can't eat any of the things on this side of the page. And that's the same thing with the Internet. Treat it like almost as you would any other addiction. You can do this. You can't do that. This is off limits. Just don't even go there. And kids really will integrate that, and they'll integrate the balance of that. What's okay, what's not okay, when it's okay, when it's not okay. And I think those four phrases are going to be key to any type of Internet control programs or any type of social networking regulation.
Awesome. I do agree with that 100%.
Mike, thank you.
I want to get you in on this from your standpoint, because we're talking about the solution aspect and the things that we're looking to do to create solutions for kids to move them away from the Internet addiction, the negative media and image, and giving them a positive outlook. What do you feel?
Well, thanks again, Tia. My background is pretty, I guess, unique, at least in the sense of the range of interests that I have, from the artistic standpoint to the more academic situated conversation. In college, I studied political science, looked a lot at policy, public administration, and so as an artist, I was interested in how art and images could influence in a positive way people's ability, their capacity to coalesce in public spaces. And so, you know, I really like Dr. Nancy's book and her idea of spiritual fitness, because, you know, with my work, I talk a lot about the ideas of spiritual etiquette and how that's something that I feel like is missing in the education system. You know, taking Sunday school into the public square, so to speak, and educating and socializing our young people to be able to operate from a spiritually balanced point of view, so that when they encounter these temptations, you know, vis-a-vis the Internet, other forms of technology, they have the tools to deal with it and to have the discernment to recognize what is being put in front of them and take the appropriate, you know, precautionary measures. It's just like anything else. Like I think Dr. Nancy was talking about, you know, the idea of just say no to technology. I mean, you know, we need to apply concepts such as abstinence, such as, you know, prevention, standards and regulations to that. Now, you know, saying regulations, people automatically think, well, you know, more government, less government, and the whole issue gets muddled. And but this really transcends, you know, politics. It transcends party affiliation, because the negative implications of the things that we're talking about affects people who vote for Democratic candidates' children, people who vote for Republican candidates' children. You know, so it really cuts across, you know, political views, religious perspective, education, socioeconomic status. This is a social global issue that we have to take on head on. And so that's what, you know, my research deals with. That's what my music deals with, my poetry, all of the things that I'm involved in, you know, in terms of collaborations and partnerships with other organizations. I mean, it's my passion. I've worked in a lot of different places throughout the United States, but, you know, most of my time on the ground has been spent in Columbus, Ohio, working in the community here, as well as Chicago. On the south side, primarily in, you know, Woodlawn, Chatham, Gresham, you know, the west side and south side of Chicago. I've done a lot of work there, too. So, I mean, these things, you find them everywhere you go. And it's not a black thing. It's not a white thing. It's not a rich thing. It's a poor thing. It's a people thing. And so we have to approach it from that standpoint.
And are you saying, actually, you're talking about treating the cause before the effects can occur, really treating the etiquette and sort of the morality of what we do, the decisions we make, so that we don't have to treat the addiction later on?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I, you know, I'm a PK. I'm a preacher's kid, and you know, so I was raised, you know, in terms of being instilled with the nurture and admonition of the Lord, you know, from birth. And one of the things, you know, that my dad would tell me and my brothers — I have five brothers, so there are six of us all together — when we would break the rules, when we would deviate from the standards and the norms that he was establishing in our lives at a young age, and then there were consequences, and we didn't want to deal with the consequences, he would say, "Son, disobedience causes you to hurt." Now, when we talk about, you know, what Dr. Nancy was speaking of in terms of, you know, with this influx of technology and social media and the addiction that comes along with that, in terms of people becoming desensitized to pain and to violence, you know, having a loss of empathy, so that they can't see or identify or recognize the fact that the people around them are hurting and feel alienated and are in pain. But I'm getting 300, you know, text messages and tweets a day. I mean, that's a existential psychological crisis that people go through, because it's like, how am I connecting and communicating with so many people through so many different forms of media, but I feel alone? So then what I think ends up happening is people end up being almost, in a sense, addicted to the process of disobedience. Now, let me explain what I mean by that in terms of social media. Society, it seems, has normalized this idea of technologically-based alienation, or technology-based alienation, okay? And what that is again, we are connected through all these things, but we have no personal relationships of meaning to us. And we're always, you know, just trying to connect with more people in a quantitative sense, but qualitatively, we have no relationships of significance to us. So you know, that whole thing, you know, I mean, you can look at it from a lot of different aspects, but the bottom line is that like Scripture says, a double-minded person is unstable in all of their ways. And so imagine being double-minded, let alone, you know, multiplying that times 10 and then times 20 and then times 50 in terms of the amount of media and content that is bombarded our way on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis. We're not double-minded. We're just completely schizophrenic and don't even know it. You know.
You know. Yeah, that double-mindedness also is, how can you focus on anything else when you're feeling an urge or a craving to do something and you're fighting that crave or that urge? That you're totally double-minded and you're not available for the war for your life.
Mm. I think the counterfeit happiness or the counterfeit connection. I know, Tia, when we on the first show, we had done a poll with some of the teens that we work with, and they were saying that they were on social media because they wanted friends. They wanted to feel connected. But as you are all so elegantly bringing up in a powerful way, it's a counterfeit connection. There, and Tia said it really well in the first show, you know, you went there for your social media. You wanted something, which is the connection, the friendship, the love, the security, whatever it is. You got something. And most of them admit that they get bullying. They get humiliated. They get a bad reputation. There's a lot of negative things with the good things that they can contact their parents easily or something like that. And the question becomes, now what? But, you know, one of the things that's really amazing me is the data that you were saying, Dr. Nancy, about initially the mind of that child, that teen, where it is in its development, finding something on the internet and it's there forever. It has an effect. That visual of the pornography or that addictive behavior, the seed is planted. And I think we forget that the era in the beginning is an era totally, and treating the effect, treating it proactively. Like if we never are exposed to something, we don't have to worry about being healed from it. We don't have to worry about the effect with it. So, you know, it really is amazing to me the statistical information of what this does to a mind just being exposed. Just being exposed. You know, I mean, it boggles my mind.
And, you know, Deb, I think you said something at the beginning of that I just want to have friends. It's like it used to be like designer jeans. Well, if all my friends wear designer jeans and I don't, then I'm not going to be part of that group. If everybody in your little group is texting you all day and you're not texting them back, are they going to continue to keep you as friends? You know, I think it's and there's actually nothing that is more important to a teenager than their friends. You know, their parents take second seat. Unfortunately, that's what happens in the teenage years. And as Tia said, their brains are not fully developed. They do not have a fully developed conscience as teenagers, and they don't always make the best decisions.
So, you know, what Mike is talking about as well, and Tia has a network that she's created devoted to helping teens have a safe place to go. I think that we're really well aware of what's going on with the problems and the effects, and I think that people need to look at this seriously, especially parents and moms. You know, you really need to educate yourself. What are some of our solutions? What are some of the things that we can do? Where can they go? I mean, they can go to Tia's network now, the new one that's up. But, Tia, do you want to talk at least
people
through that?
Well, I want to go back. Yeah, I do. Because the one thing I want to state, and, Mike, thank you so much for being on air to give your viewpoint. I have to say something because I know Mike. His upbringing has a lot to do with what he's been able to bring forth in his understanding of what we're going through now. And the first thing that we want to do is we've got to go back to the root, the cause. It's like you said, Dr. Nancy, and it's like you said, Mike, and Deb. We can, and I take it as, you can put a Band-Aid over the gunshot wound, but you didn't take care of the gun that shot off the bullet. Remove the gun.
What? Because that just blew me away.
Well, you remove the gun. So the first thing that, why I said this about education and about upbringing is because Mike's parents, Mike, you were homeschooled.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, I was homeschooled, and my younger five brothers were also homeschooled. We were all homeschooled. We went into the public school system, you know, at different grade levels. But, you know, as I was the first born, you know, when I went to public school, my first year in public school was eighth grade. And it was a very good experience. Definitely, you know, was different. I mean, you know, I think being homeschooled sort of helped reinforce the ability of myself and my brothers to be more self-reliant, less dependent on groupthink and you know, this over emphasis on the need to fit in. I mean, you know, we all went through that. We all go through that as adults in, you know, in certain ways. I mean, you know, it's a part of being human. But because my parents decided to do it different in terms of how we were educated, you know, we had to develop our own identity, our own self-concept, our own pride, healthy pride in who we were and why we lived the way we did. And so, you know, the homeschooling really helped me explore my own thoughts and ask questions in ways that once I found the answer to those questions, I had a sense of not only sort of intellectual peace, but like a spiritual fullness that, hey, you know, I'm making some progress. I'm starting to understand things about the world. And the older I got, you know, I could kind of chart my progress over time. And you know, it was just such a great experience. I mean, I don't have any kids yet, and hopefully one day I will, but that's definitely something that I plan to do with them too, because, you know, my parents were adamant about other people not having influence too early in our lives over our worldview, especially in a society where it's a very manufactured kind of production line type approach to educating children and socializing children. And I'm 33, you know, so my elementary school years were in the 80s, middle school, you know, in the 90s, high school in the 90s, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, I kind of got the last of, you know, old school always changes from year to year, decade to decade. But, you know, I was kind of the last of the 70s babies, got the last of the old school stuff. And you know, as things were in that transition mode, even in music, urban music, from more of a positive, conscious hip-hop, you know, to more of a gangster rap, commercially driven form of hip-hop, you know. Zero tolerance was really coming in heavy into the school systems as I was going into school, you know. So things were changing a lot. So, you know, I'm sort of a cusp, baby cusp person in terms of the whole generational shifts that we see happening, and I can kind of relate to both sides, you know. Like I said, I'm 33. My dad, this June, he'll be 70 years old. So I say, you know, when I talk to people in an endearing way, in a very, you know, respectful way, you know, I have an old dad. So when they say, man, you know, you seem like an old soul, or, you know, you're wise beyond your years, you know, I have to give credit to God and to my parents, but it's because, you know, my dad was born in 1941. Now, you know, for the listeners, I mean, just imagine that. I mean, when were you born? We're in 2011, you know. Imagine if your dad or your mom was born in 1941. That's when World War II started, you know. I mean, in that sense, I mean, especially in a modern world where, you know, last summer is considered back in the day. I mean, come on, on the videos, BET, VH1, all that. So, you know, I got some really, you know, timeless values and perspective from somebody who grew up not only and was born and raised in the segregated South before the internet, but before television, before really radio. I mean, all like that, you know. I mean, he listened to Opryland back in the Pennyroyal area of Kentucky, you know, Todd County, Kentucky. So, I mean, and then to raise six black boys in the inner city of Columbus, Ohio, and to be an entrepreneur and be self-employed and you know, homeschooling his children and all that, I mean, my experience was very unique, maybe weird by certain standards, you know, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. And I think in terms of, you know, solutions, I always go back to my foundation, which is, you know, God's word, and, you know, the idea that we don't want to be conformed to the world with all these images and all these things coming at us. We have to be proactive and very intentional and very conscientious about transforming our minds by renewing our minds. And that's a daily process. And the more we do that, the more we die to the impulses and the desires to fit into what the world says is important, what the world says you should care about. And,
you know, Mike,
and so, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I think that you bring up a great point about,
right.
And Tia, that families, you know, it starts.
That was my point of bringing it up.
Right, that families, it starts at a very young age. It begins in the family. If we're getting, you know, that strong sense of good self-esteem at home, if we have strong human relationships, and most of,
right.
I think 80% of how we interpret communication is in nonverbal ways, which you don't have on the internet. You know, if we have those things, then we are not going to be susceptible to those type of counterfeit connections on the internet. And then we can use the internet for the good things that it's done. You know, a Stanford University study, I just wanted to share a statistic, says that nearly 1 in 8 Americans suffer from at least one side of problematic internet use. And some of the signs, and there's actually an internet addiction resource you can go to. I mean, this is so prevalent that there are actual netaddiction.com, the Center for Internet Addiction. I mean, there are
right.
places like this where people can go, but, you know, people feeling preoccupied, you know, unable to focus without going on the internet, restless, moody, depressed, irritable. I mean, there are just so many things. And if we can look at, okay, here's the evil black flower that we have, you know, these bad, negative things that none of us want as a child or adult. But where's the root on that? And I think the point that, you know, maybe homeschooling people, you know, have a better sense of self-esteem and they're not vulnerable. Is it that type of connection? So
yeah. I want to interject on that because I said take the gun away and then you don't have the gunshot wound. But the bottom line root cause is that we have to get back to being absolutely 100% responsible for our kids. We can't push them off to the internet. We have to take the time to move away from that space, from all of the things that are like those segregated media behaviors. And I say segregated because they are segregated but yet unified, but they also keep you out of a place where you're actually being human with someone. You're not actually interacting. And the gun part of it, of what that was, is getting all the way back to the root of being responsible adults in our society to not allow everything else to be so much more important to us than our kids, and to become involved and to take responsibility. And that's actually why I wanted Mike to bring up his background history and how he was raised, because if your parents, you know, have that involvement with you, you have a much better chance statistically of being humanly evolved, having the right social interaction with people. When you interact, when your family gives you a base to come from, in the root of it, you tend to go out in the world with a better way in which you deal with other people.
And can I say something real quick?
I'm going to have to get off the call, but
amen.
I just wanted to say thank you. Goodbye.
Amen. Thank
you, Dr. Nancy.
Thank you.
Okay.
Dr. Nancy's website, can you read that so people can go to her website for people listening on replay?
I put it in the chat room, and it'll be Dr. Nancy
Online, I think.
Online, yes, it is. Dr. Nancy Online.
.com. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Mike?
No, I was just going to say, you know, the scripture that talks about train up a child in the way that they should go, so that when they're old, they won't depart from it. I mean, that is a two-edged sword too. I mean, if we train children properly, they might, you know, deviate or go through their growing pains to a certain degree, you know, as they grow and mature. But they'll come back to the rivers and the lakes that they're used to, that good foundation that they were, you know, given. But let's say that was reversed, and they were trained in a way that is not going to help them have, you know, adult relationships of meaning and significance. Okay, well, when they're old, they're not going to depart from that either, unless they encounter something, you know, outside of the socialization that occurred in their family structure to help them, you know, get some life skills and some spiritual etiquette and some spiritual fitness to be able to compensate for those deficits that were instilled in them as children. Mm. So, I mean, you know, it's very important that we look at both sides of the process, you know, when we talk about these things.
And I think that anybody listening on this show or a replay or has a friend that they can share the show with, you're probably considering the possibility, you're at least aware of the possibility that this may be a problem for you, for your teen, and you're considering that. And I just want to bring a resource for people. If you wanted to take a quick quiz, the netaddiction.com site, the Center for Internet Addiction, has a great quiz. And it says, how do you know if your child may be addicted to the Internet? Many parents at least ask their children how much time they're spending on the Internet. Trouble is, most kids are apt to lie, especially if they're already addicted. And if the computer is in their room, you may have no way of knowing the truth. So they provide a test that may help in determining if your child is addicted to the Internet at home. And, you know, I think we had spoken before, T, on an earlier show about creating a dialogue and that Internet
right.
test, but having a dialogue. And if you go to the site, which is, let's see, netaddiction.com, you know, they give you this free quiz that you can take with your child, and it's just a few questions, and it'll give you some insight. And then, you know, from there, once you're aware, you can take those actions. And consider the fact that it starts in the home. So a parent who feels helpless, no, what we hope today's show and all of the series is going to provide is hope and looking at, you know, new ways of thinking.
Amen. And as we stated before, with the Star Network and other resources, there are a lot of things that are becoming a part of the Star Network, as well as partnerships that will help parents and teens as well with tools. Definitely look at your resources that you're mentioning too Deb. And those are the things that we're trying to help provide. I told you from the first show when we had a caller and it was River and basically stated that there was nothing that we could do. I took that personally and passionately that that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
As long as there's breath, there's something that we can do, and we have to help our kids.
Tell us about the Tia Star Network, what you're doing to build that safe place to turn the tide for our teens and parents that are dealing with this problem of IAD.
Well, linked up with global partners, and what we're doing, I'll be brief, but we're creating a complete safe network in place where teens can go without having to deal with the cyberbullying, the sexting, the texting, and all of those things. But also we're creating a way that parents can also interact and become reconnected with their teens.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also creating programs outside of the cyberspace atmosphere, where you can go into your local communities or global communities and be able to reconnect and have actual external activities where you get back to the root thing of being with your family, doing things, removing yourself, regulating some of those hours. So there's the on-site aspect of it and the off-site aspect of it. Basically, just getting back to the root, being a family again, doing things with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of parents who are actually out there wanting to reconnect with their teens, and they don't even know who that child is in their house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they're seeking help. Just like there are kids out there who don't know their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And they're seeking guidance and leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things that we're working on with Global Partners to bring that back. Get back to the root. Get back to being family again. Get back to sharing. Get back to caring. Get back to being involved. Get back to having some say in your kids' education. You know, giving some guidelines. Giving some, you know, putting some, you know, guidelines and regulations. I'm not saying that all media is bad or social media is bad. It's not, because it definitely has this positive aspect. But we do need to get to a point where we're not so addicted to it.
Yeah, and let's give them, let's think about and give them some very positive incentives to make the changes that we would like to see them make. You know,
right.
that's all. I mean, a carrot is always better than a stick, you know, whenever possible. So, you know, we have to definitely build incentives into everything that we're talking about, not only for the parents, but for the children as well, so that they begin to associate, you know, positive benefits and rewards with the decision-making processes and skills that we're trying to you know, help them acquire. So
right.
I think that's important.
Right.
I think that's,
you know,
I think that's the most, I think that's the whole key, Mike, because once these kids start getting, as you said, a positive experience, they get
right.
that positive feeling from doing something different, that's
yes.
going to snowball, and then they're going to go on the direction, a different direction, and they're going to say, wow, I didn't even know this is what I wanted, but this is what I need. But until
yes.
we teach them, until we give them an example of what the genuine flavor tastes like, they're going to
exactly.
always go for the spiritual popcorn. They're going to always go for the counterfeit connection. And I think it's our responsibility, as you stated so well, to provide, hey, did you, you know, this site, this way, a new way of thinking, because
right.
they really don't know what they want until they actually taste it. It's like, you know, we all want love. We all want happiness, but we don't know where to go for the real, genuine love. We don't
right.
even spend time alone in the silence of our own mind to hear what it is that we need to know. And all of that connects. And I do think, whatever your faith, I mean, for me, it's God, but whatever your faith, whatever your spiritual connection, you know, we've lost that, and I think that until we can be alone in that prayerful, quiet silence, we are never going to know who we are. And if we don't know who we are, we're going to not know what we want, we're not going to know what we need, and we're going to always be vulnerable to the victim of the counterfeit causes, and that only leads to bad feelings. And that only leads to all of this that we're seeing, the cyberbullying, the sexting, the porn, all of this stuff. But, you know, salt only hurts on an open wound. And,
right.
you know, I like you said, with the gun or whatever, if there's no wound, it doesn't matter what's thrown at you. It doesn't hurt. But unfortunately, what we're doing is taking and cutting is another perfect example with kids and suicide rates. You know, obviously,
right.
there's not all these negative things going on if there isn't something that hurts to begin with.
Right.
And
it's
our responsibility.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Mike, sir.
No, I was agreeing with her. I was saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. Absolutely.
Yes, definitely. So that's our solution. Our solution is just getting back to the root. And if you don't have parents, then we'll be your surrogate parents. I mean, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
So
if
we come
to the root.
Right, so I know that we've only got a few minutes left, so I want to make sure
yes.
that we have an action. What's the take action that we can do now at the end of the show? A parent listening, a teen listening, you know, they've been listening to this. What can they,
yes.
let's just come up with a couple of simple steps that they can engage in.
The take action right now for any parent listening, stop what you're doing that you think is so important to you. And realize that your kids are more important than that. And start to bond and get back with your children. The other part of it, in regards to what the solutions are that we're developing, contact us. Because we're here to help. We're not here to, you know, regulate you or chastise you or make you feel like, okay, we're the new internet policing town.
Right.
We are here to help. We're here to help you bond back with your kids. We're here to get back to what we all want from a human standpoint, love in our society. I mean, that's what we're searching for when we go out into those realms anyway. We just don't get it because it's false.
Hmm.
So connect with us. Connect with Deb. Connect with Mike. Connect with me. Connect with Dr. Nancy. My contact information, TiaStarr, it's TiaStarr, at TiaStarr.com.
And then Dr. Nancy would be Dr. Nancy Online, all one word, DRNANCY Online. And Mike, your contact information, please.
Yes, contact information, facebook.com/FrankTalkJr, Frank Talk Jr., that's all one word, or Twitter at Frank Talk Jr. I can also be contacted through www.firstfamENT.com. That's firstfamENT.com. And we're pre-launching MikeSurgeon.com. That will be up next Thursday, May 12th.
Mm.
So, or through Tia as well, because one of the things that she didn't say, because she is very humble, is that she's my publicist. And so, you know, anybody that wants to contact MikeSurgeon or, you know, anything like that, feel free to contact Tia. Feel free to contact my agent, Derek Pannell. His email address is dtpannell, P-A-N-N-E-L-L, at firstfamENT.com. So I'm here. I'm available. You know, my only suggestions, recommendations to the young people, Tia spoke to the parents, so what I like to say to the young people is, you know, develop that sense of something greater than yourself. Have a reverence and a respect for that feeling that you feel, that wonder, that mystery of, man, this is such a big world. I mean, there's got to be something out there. You know, develop that. I mean, and what I'm really saying is, again, my foundation is the scripture. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness and all these things. Everything you want in your life will be added unto you, but it's a process. You gotta seek righteousness. And what is righteousness? One of my brothers kind of changed the phonetics of righteousness to say right choicedness, to make the right choices, to have a hunger and a desire within yourself to do the right thing. And regardless of the cost, regardless of the stigma, regardless of the names that people call, all of the, you know, she's a goody two-shoes, he's a nerd, blah, blah, blah. Don't worry about that, because the people who are clowning you now are going to be clowns when they get older if they don't change, and they're going to be paying to come to hear you speak, to send their kids to be educated by you in middle school, high school, or college. I'm telling you, that's how it happens. The kids that get teased are the ones that everybody's paying to go see in some form or fashion once they grow up and get older. And just know that you're not going to be a kid, you know, forever. And just really start young, you know, with this attitude of gratitude. Be grateful, be thankful, and everything you want, you will have.
Yes, and I think that I'm definitely grateful for having Tia Starr here again for the third series, and we have our last fourth series Saturday after next at 10 a.m., and having Mike and Dr. Nancy and all of you listening. And, you know, there was a comment in the chat from Debbie Mancini-Wilson, and for those of you who don't know her, we just really are blessed with some best people listening and being here. She is Color My World bestseller for a children's author, and she just commented, I love, big letters, the message here. It is so very important for parents to know what is in their kids' head and heart in order to help them process it. And she also comments about Mike having that great line that a carrot is always better than a stick, because kids need to see and learn from our examples. And, you know, I can't hear what you're saying because what you are doing speaks so loudly. And I think that, you know, all of us here today listening, you can go out and be an example, make a difference in the world by doing and saying and sharing the show and taking some of the tips that we have and connecting with all our guests. So, we're out of time. I just want to thank everybody so much for being part of this very important and needed, you know, mission, and the passion that T is creating in her network is what we're going to keep talking about. So make sure that you're here week after next. It's Saturday. I don't know, what is that date? Do you know what that date is, Tia, for the fourth show?
Yeah.
Oh, you said week after next.
Saturday after next at 10 a.m. and with questions and comments, and and we'll be wrapping up
the
21st. Okay,
yeah.
So make sure you're here for the 21st, Saturday at 10 a.m. And thank you for being a blessing. And go out and share your shine, and let's together make a difference for our terrific teens and parents. We need you. This is where it starts, is with you. And as Tia said, drop everything else, because there's nothing more important than our terrific teens and our kids. So go out and make it a blessed day.
Thank
God bless.
You for listening
thank you.
To the Best People We Amen. Know radio show
you.
With your host,
you.
Deb Scott. For more on Deb and her guests, plus her award-winning guidebook to transformation, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up, go to Deb's website, greenskyandbluegrass.com. You can also connect with Deb for coaching or speaking, and sign up for Deb's free Mind Vitamin newsletter while you're there. So now, you're one step closer today to your greatness. We look forward to being with you next time on the Best People We Know radio show.